Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is John Morton, Director of the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement. Also joining our conversation from IBM is George Cruiser. So, John, I'd like to discuss your efforts to reform the immigration detention system. Could you outline your strategy? How do you do it in an era of fiscal austerity?
I recognize that the power of detention is an awesome power of the sovereign and is one that needs to be exercised. The immigration enforcement system depends on it. There's a high correlation between detention and removal, very high. The reason you need to detain them is that they'll run away if you don't. And so we detain people of all ages, both genders, all sorts of circumstances. And my view is that if we're going to exercise that power and exercise it on a grand scale, which we do, we've never had more detention space than we do right now. We were averaging just 2 weeks ago 37,000 beds a day. That's a lot of detention beds. We're going to detain something on the order of 400,000 people this year. If we're going to operate that kind of a system, it is incumbent on us to make sure that we detain these people in settings that are appropriate and that we provide good custodial care, good medical care. And I think that is our obligation regardless of the person's circumstance, you know, even if the person is a criminal. If we're going to detain them, we need to make sure that we at least provide them with good medical care and that while they're in our custody and on their way out of the country, they're well treated. So what has that meant in practice? It's meant a series of reforms that have been many years in the making. We have instituted an online detainee locator system. So for the first time in the agency's history, you can type in somebody's name, and if we're detaining them, it'll tell you where they're being detained, how to get there, how to contact them, what the number is, what the visiting hours are. Huge reform. We have medical specialists now in our major facilities. We've completely overhauled the medical care we provide. We've expanded it dramatically. We've instituted a whole series of improved medical standards. We've created a advisory group with immigration advocates and medical professionals to advise us on how to do this. And at the same time, we've gone out and when we contract now for detention space or assistance, we work this into the contract. And we've been able to pay for it because we've been a much more discriminating customer when it comes to detention space.
John, as you predicted at the top of the show, our discussion so far has all been about people and immigration. I want to take a minute to get you to talk a little bit about the threat posed by either goods coming in or goods going out. And one that I'd like you to highlight is the role on, you know, sensitive technology, sensitive products. I think lots of listeners may not realize you have any role in protecting us from weapons of mass destruction or other devious intentions.
So ICE is the principal enforcer of the nation's export control laws. We run a center called the Export Enforcement Coordination Center. And what we do is to investigate unscrupulous arms dealers who are trying to obtain either sophisticated weaponry or sensitive technology in violation of the many U.S. laws that either restrict the export or prohibit it or require certain steps to be taken before the export can happen. Sadly, there is a thriving business in sensitive U.S. technology and sensitive weaponry. So we have to spend a lot of time on this. And our nation's national security depends on a very aggressive enforcement regime. It's a difficult regime because it's a game of cat and mouse. It's a game that is largely transnational. Many of the arms dealers and brokers are operating in foreign countries. So it's one of the reasons we have a very large international presence because we need those relationships and that international presence to be able to carry out these investigations. And they take many, many years and they take require a great deal of sophisticated investigation. I got to say it's one of the areas of what ICE and in particular HSI does that I really am personally very proud of and I think most citizens, if they knew the full story of what went into this kind of work, they'd be very proud of the work that our folks do on behalf of the country. I feel the same about a related area, which is intellectual property enforcement. And we are the principal enforcers of the nation's intellectual property laws. You know, the United States is a country of innovation, and we produce many, many things and export many, many things because we are great thinkers and dreamers. And that part of our culture, that part of our business community is an important reason why we are the world's great economic power. You've got to be able to protect that innovation or, you know, criminals are going to eat it alive. This is a problem that covers the entire spectrum of U.S. manufacturing and production. People try to, particularly the opponents of intellectual property enforcement, try to distort this argument into, you know, it's just, well, who cares if some 15-year-old, you know, downloads, a song off the internet. No, this is about counterfeit airbags, counterfeit toothpaste, beauty products that you put on your face, engine parts, you know, engine spinning out the window there at 30,000 feet when you're crossing the Atlantic. This is not a minor concern, and it's also one that is really all about our economy. Guess what? Organized criminals, and this is what this game is now all about. It's organized crime. This isn't an individual mom and pop's operation. Organized criminals aren't paying pensions. They're not paying any taxes. They're not doing any R&D. They're not trying to make America great. They're just trying to make money by stealing someone else's hard work, paying some employee in the back room, you know, a third of what a legitimate employee would be paid, and then just waiting for the next advance, and then they're going to steal that as well.
Well, John, you actually mentioned public safety, as you pointed out, as a core, and you just described that very well. But it's another element of your mission that I don't think folks are really familiar with, and that is targeting and combating human trafficking and transnational sexual exploitation. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure can. So that's another area where ICE has really become the principal enforcers of federal law. So we spend a great deal of time on human trafficking, and we spend a great deal of time on the exploitation of children. Sadly, there is so much of this work, particularly on the child exploitation side of things, that I could have every agent in the agency doing this every day, and there'd be plenty of work. We're about to assume the chairmanship of the Virtual Global Task Force on Child Exploitation. Why that's important is because child exploitation, child pornography has become increasingly international and it's become increasingly online. The internet has allowed for an explosion in the exchange of abusive material involving children. The internet makes that possible on a grand scale. Just to give you a little example of this, we just successfully brought down an international network of child pornographers, and they were producing a material and sharing it amongst themselves. And how we brought this network down is that we started out with a search warrant in Boston, and we came across a series of photographs of a 2-year-old boy who was being molested by an adult, and the boy was holding a stuffed animal in the series of pictures. We did not think the boy was American from the background of the photograph, and we turned to our friends at Interpol to help try to determine where this child was from. The Dutch National Police saw the photograph, and a very alert Dutch officer noticed that the stuffed animal was, in fact, a rabbit that was unique to Holland, and we then, working with the Dutch, arranged for one of the photographs to be shown on Dutch TV. And the night it was shown, the parents of the child recognized their child and called in and said, you know, that's my child. And I also know how this has unfolded because I think the person in question is going to be one of the men at the daycare that my child goes to. the individual, the perpetrator, was also watching the same show and began to try to destroy all of his records on his computer. Fortunately, we were able to move in quickly. The Dutch arrested him. But that kind of work, you just got to do it no matter what. It's the right thing to do. That doesn't really depend on resources. We're just going to do it and do it strongly. And then just try to get out there and educate people on the dangers that the internet can pose to very young children, and how you got to keep an eye out on, you know, where your children are and who they're dealing with in those early formative years.
What does the future hold for the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement? We will ask its director, John Morton, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour.